Welcome to a special episode of AU Manufacturing Conversations with Brent Belinsky, featuring one of the companies we're putting forward as part of our quest to identify and celebrate Australia's 50 most innovative manufacturers for 2024. This campaign has been made possible through the generous support of MYOB, the original business management software developers. Nothing beats the OG. As well as the CSIRO and the New South Wales Government's Advanced Manufacturing Research Facility. Okay, Brad, thank you very much for joining us here on AU Manufacturing Conversations. Pleasure to have you on our program.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks for getting me on.
So, standard opening question is, how did you get here and what do you make?
So, Transmutations, we're a manufacturer. We're also a recycler. And probably at our heart, we're an R&D business. Yeah, we're in the waste, plastic, and circular economy sector. We make homewares from bread tags, which is probably what we're known for. That's the first product we did. We also do bowls from used styrofoam. And our latest product, which we'll talk about a bit fair bit, is the bar chairs, the concrete bar chairs from a powder coating waste. How we got here, I left school and went to the army, which was interesting in one sense that if I didn't do that, I wouldn't have got my degree in chemistry. So went to the Defence Academy and got a degree in chemistry, which I really hadn't used that much until lately. And then I went off and did a logistics career. So most of my career has been with Patrick's in stevedoring and transport and rail, with Toll and oil and gas sector as well, doing logistics at that. And then we basically got sick of doing that, really. I got quite burnt out. Our kids had left home and we decided to pretty much sell the family home, sell everything, and the wife and I of now 30-something years, travelled around Australia looking for just relief management jobs. Yeah, complete re-switch of the whole life, basically, and that was really, really good. And then my wife, who wanted to get on the road, also wanted to get off the road. So after about 18 months of doing that, decided to stop in Robe down in South Australia. So we're originally from Queensland, and after our travels around the place, ended up in a little seaside place in South Australia, which is interesting.
Nice. And so you mentioned something of your previous career. Tell me about how you got into recycling plastics, as I understand it's a little bit of an unconventional story.
Yeah, quite unconventional. But the deal that my wife made me to get off the road, because I was pretty keen to stay on the road, was if we stopped, she would go and get a full-time job and support us, and I would get an empty shed and figure something out. So that's pretty much where we landed in Robe. We bought an empty shed, and I was renovating the shed and getting it ready for whatever I was going to do, and I came across a YouTube video of precious plastics. I always think of environmentalism more as common sense than something I'm passionate about, but it's always been at the heart of sort of my thinking, and I hadn't had the opportunity to do much of that in my earlier careers. So when I seen this precious plastic project, it did actually inspire me, and I thought, you could start this from your empty shed. You can build the machines yourself out of old ovens and car jacks and scrap metal, and start recycling plastic. So I thought there was a bit of a meld between my chemistry, a bit of my engineering sort of interests, if you like, and tinkering in a shed and artisan stuff all together in one. So I went home to my wife, like Jack and the Beanstalk, saying, I've discovered this video and we're going to make a small plastic recycling factory. And she said, yes, dear, of course we are. So we went from there and it's really turned out very well.
Well, it's always a joy to present one's harebrained schemes to the missus and see if they fly. And we could get into that, but that's probably not going to be awesome radio, or we might embarrass both of ourselves and we don't need to go down that path. So it's kind of a side issue, but you know, you studied chemistry, worked in logistics for quite a reasonable amount of time. There was some gap between your studies and what you're doing now. Were your chemistry chops a bit rusty? Did you have to remember a lot of stuff? And did you reconnect with your younger self, I guess?
Definitely. Yeah, I've always loved chemistry. It was a bit of an odd choice at the time because the country really, and then not really having university in our sort of family heritage at all. So I just, the backstory with the chemistry was my dad used to take sugar to the sugar mill in Maribor, and I used to go with him. And as I walked through the sugar mill, there's all these people look like they work in coal mines. They're very, you know, black soot covered in all the byproducts of the cane industry. And this one guy walked across the floor and he had this white jacket on. He had a folder under his arm and he was absolutely spotless. And I said, who's that guy? And they go, he's the chemist. And I said, okay, that's me.
Let's get to your tinkering and your inspiration from the videos and making your own machines. Tell me about the sort of trial and error involved in that and some of the, I guess, there must have been some happy accidents, but I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah, it definitely was. Firstly, making the machines. So I'm not a welder. Had to learn to weld. And I'm still not a welder, but things are holding together, so that's good. So the making of the machines themselves, and then playing with the different types of plastics and discovering or rediscovering polymer chemistry, really. So I started with all different types of plastics we were collecting from the public. So we ended up with polystyrene being a little bit of our niche because it's really not covered well in the marketplace at the moment. So I've avoided PET initially and avoided HDPE particularly because it is being covered in our current sort of marketplace. So I'm not only looking for plastics that I can work with, but I'm also looking for niches in the market where big industry is already handling one type of plastic. Why am I trying to compete with that or do anything in that space? So polystyrene is probably where we landed. And then we had the collaboration, first of many collaborations, and that's been the story of our rapid rise, if you like, was with Aussie Bread Tags for wheelchairs who were looking for a recycler. And they were based in Adelaide and they collect all over Australia, this sort of post-consumer bread tag. And they were looking for someone to recycle and couldn't find anyone. They were sending them back to South Africa where the charity had first started. So when they found us and I found them, I had this source of beautiful plastic, really, high-impact polystyrene, and started working with that. So that's sort of where we started the serious type recycling on a little bit more scale and working with polystyrene.
And so that's one organisation you've got involved with. Tell me about some of the other ones, because you've got some decent partners. Just a skim of your material tells me that. Country Road and Airport and Jeweller. Tell me about the process of getting them to buy into your vision, which is not always easy for a small operator, and how it's all happened.
Yeah, so the word I use is serendipity, and I'll keep using it because it's exactly the word that suits what's happening. We had a bit of an article, or it was a video on ABC, the local ABC radio that went to a bit of an internet on what we were doing. And it was quite, obviously very small at the time, started with the bread tag stuff. And I got a phone call out of the blue from Country Road. So kudos to them because everyone's trying to knock their door down to get into their stores. And they found this, one of their designers, Bill, he doesn't work for them anymore, but he's the one that rang me out of the blue and said, "This is Country Road, we'd love to do a collaboration with you." And I said, of course, you wouldn't hang up because I immediately thought someone was trying to scare me. So they rang back, which was good. And look, we were very, I just built these machines. I was doing three or four bowls a day just to show people that you could do it, really. So after working with them for about 6 months, I built another shed, scaled up an operation enough that I could do something with them. And we put some homewares into Country Road. I do the white only bread tags for Country Road. So that's our signature with them. The great thing with Country Road, actually, and I think I'm the only one that has this sort of deal with them, is once I manufacture the shape that they design for them in the white bread tags, I'm then allowed to use that same shape, if you like, with my coloured range. So my range of the coloured bread tag products, even though they don't have Country Road branding on them, obviously, because we sell them as transmutation items, are designed by their guys, so they're beautiful. So that really gives me an edge and ability, I suppose, in that homeware space. So that's Country Road, and that was just called out of the blue. And then a couple of years after that, a bit more established, Graham from Dulux came with his family on holiday, basically, and walked through the shop, and my wife goes through a fairly good explanation of what we do and how we do it. And he said, "Oh, I've got a waste problem at work. I wouldn't mind if you had a look at it." And that was pretty much how we worked out our what has become, really, as far as we're concerned, the world first with looking at powder coating waste. So again, serendipity, the magic shop, as my wife calls it. People come on holiday at Robe, and we connect with people. And it's either word of mouth from that connection or the actual people themselves are walking through our shop. And there's no better way to connect with people and face-to-face and also in your familiar environment. And I think they're a bit off guard as well because they're on holidays and they're enjoying themselves. So it's been a lot easier for me with those connections than trying to knock down a corporate door.
Can I just hear about Graham from Dulux? He was in a kind of an operational role. And tell me about what he did at the factory and what he saw as problem and what you saw as a solution.
Graham's only just left Dulux for another career, and we're very close still. So him and his wife Lisa and the family came out just recently to Robe for another holiday. But Graham is one of those guys that you really need to get these things off the ground. So when he was in Dulux, he was operations manager for Australia and New Zealand businesses with the powder coating division. And he's seen the potential that we could have with this solution, and he really drove it inside that organisation. And if you don't have those sort of champions inside the corporations doing that, it is even harder than it is. Like, it's hard now, but it's even harder if you don't have someone who's also as passionate about the solution inside the organisation. So he's really helped lay that foundation, make the connections with the CEOs and the power brokers inside the organisation, and he's left it in a really good spot when he's left, because Anthony Privatelli is now the CEO in that space. We have a good relationship. He's done all those introductions. We've had meetings with Keith, who's over in New Zealand, who's their main R&D guy. So we've made all the connections within the organisation that need to be made through that personal relationship.
And so tell me about the problem of post-industrial waste powder coating. What were you looking at when you saw it as a chemist or as an experimenter or however you want to put it? What was interesting? What was problematic? What did you see in that material?
Yes, I gathered the information that they already had on. So Gillex have been trying for quite a while. I guess to put it in perspective, there's a report done in 2020 that estimates there's about 800,000 tonnes of powder coating industrial waste going to landfill every year in the world. So it's a massive problem for whoever produces powder coating, and it's sort of an industrial problem that sits behind the curtain to a certain extent, because powder coating in its application is very quite environmentally friendly because it doesn't have, you know, the side effects that the wet paint does, but and the usage is quite good. But behind the scenes when they're making it, there is a bit of industrial waste caused. So that problem exists in a smaller scale, obviously, with the Dulux factory in Melbourne. And they had tried to go out and solve this with university reports and industry-type joint ventures to try to figure out a way to solve it. They've had some trials done with other plastic makers and stuff, and they weren't coming up with any sort of commercial answers. So when I seen it, the problematic parts of it is it's a powder, so it's hard to mix and dust and commercially sort of add it, because it's a powder, you know, it's not as easy than a hard plastic to sort of work with. And it's a thermoset, so chemically that presents issues as well. So they're the problematic things. But when I seen it, I just looked like clean industrial plastic waste to me. And I thought, that's great. So we've got to be able to do something with this. So I did a fair bit of mucking around with very rudimentary sort of R&D because, you know, as I've said, we've just had an empty shed. We're starting with machines we've made ourselves, so I don't have the high-tech equipment. So I got a hold of an old Arberg injection moulder that's back in 1985 sort of days, a couple of grand, someone was throwing it out. And I basically stripped it down and was able to use the mechanism, you know, the injection and the pressure and those sorts of things to do my mixing and stuff with teaspoons and bits and pieces and cement mixers to get the mixing right. So it was pretty rough, but it worked. And then from that rudimentary sort of stage, I could fine-tune the whole process.
We'd like to take another moment now to acknowledge our sponsors, MYOB, as well as the CSIRO and the New South Wales Government's Advanced Manufacturing Research Facility. There would be no 50 Most Innovative without these guys. Thanks again for making this campaign possible. You talked about the ingredients and how you've sort of tinkered with them. Tell me about the end product. Why bar chairs? First of all, I'm not a concreter, so I saw bar chairs and I thought it was stools for pubs because I'm a moron. But bar chairs, tell me what they are. I know now. Tell the audience what they are and why were they a good match for what you're doing?
You won't be the first and you won't be the last to think of bar chairs in a bar somewhere. Why I picked on that product, and it's been a journey as well, because the plastic that we're now making, the post-prime plastic as we're calling it, is a lot higher quality and stronger and has a lot more application than that initial product I've come up with. Why I chose bar chair is because they're ubiquitous. There's so many of them out there. And I've always got an eye on the market, because with the circular economy and trying to be in the circular economy as a business, you've got to sell something. Too many businesses have failed in this sector because they can't sell either what they're making, and they're making something to try to push into a market that the market doesn't want, or they're making something that's already in the market and can be made for, you know, massively cheaper somewhere else, so the market's not ready for it yet economically. So we're trying to make sure that what we do make has a market to go into. So I had a vision of the bar chair not just as a bar chair, but as a product that fits into a higher end sector of the market, which is the ESG type component, your major construction companies, your defence industries, your government projects that are now requiring ESG credentials, if you like, from your building materials. So to me, this is the deluxe sort of version of your bar chair that comes with you, you know, sustainability credentials, provenance, all of those sorts of things. So seeing it as a product that firstly, at the start, I beefed it up because I thought my plastic might have been a bit weaker. It actually turned out to be stronger. So Sun very much helped me with the design of the bar chair. So it's a stronger bar chair than you would find on the market traditionally. So it's turned out to be a good product in the sense that it's the big leveling machines that the big construction companies use crush a lot of the existing bar chairs, whereas ours will hold them up because it's stronger. It's got the provenance, so you know exactly where everything's come from. It's got the carbon emission sort of data, and we're undergoing GEICA accreditation for it. So we're really pitching the bar chair, if you like, at the higher end of that sort of construction market. But the plastic itself that we've come up with can be used in a whole heap of applications for higher end, if you like, products than a concrete bar chair.
In your application for our Most Innovative campaign, you said you'd gone about trying to get this patented. What are you patenting, the material itself or the process or something else?
Yeah, so the process at the moment, like I said, the 800,000 tonnes of powder coating industrial waste is going to landfill. So no one's, as far as I can tell, really come up with a commercial outcome or recycling outcome for that waste. That's why it's going to landfill. So we're patenting the process where economically and viably and also environmentally, we can take that waste and make it into another polymer that you can use. The other thing about our polymer is it's recyclable again. So that's quite important from a point of view of what you're going to make. If you're making something that can't be recycled again, then it's obviously got to go to landfill sooner than later. And the application, people think bar chair is going to be buried in concrete, which it is. But a lot of the, especially the higher end construction company now with their contracts, they will put down pre-slabs, if you like, that need to be taken back up again and recycled. That's part of their contract. And there's a lot more concrete recycling happening now, not just as part of contracts, but just naturally to try to get land-based materials and stuff as well. So making something, even if it gets buried in concrete, to be recycled again, I think is quite important with the stewardship side.
Would you be able to talk about the volumes? You mentioned you're potentially about to get an order for 80,000 units. Are you happy to talk about volumes that are coming through?
We're waiting for our first physical order to come through, but we've been promised a fairly large one. We're scaling our operation because obviously the other thing that we need to put out into the marketplace is a credibility and an ability to scale. So we've got investors now on board to be able to do that. We've got some really good partnerships and collaborations that we have in our network that enable us to scale. So we have SBS is another startup, Australian startup, really, really good company, a young couple over in Hamilton, Victoria. So they're processors and they enable us to get our source materials, if you like, at scale, and we're able to manufacture now at sort of scale as well. So we are now going to a marketplace where we're not just talking about some bloke in a shed in regional South Australia, but a network where we can do large orders. So the first order with the bar chair, like I said, 80,000 bar chairs in one order, we can do that. So that's what we're trying to pitch now to the market, if you like, and some of the higher-end ones, that we have the capability to not just have this high-end polymer coming from all recycled sources, but we can do it at scale.
Everyone has ambitions. Let's hear about yours. And what do you see? You don't know the future, obviously, but if things go well for you, how do you see this product rolling out and how do you see other products being developed? Because obviously you've got to keep at it.
We're actually designing our and structuring our company now for massive growth, really. I mean, that's how I picture it. We've made that decision to not be a small business anymore, but graduate to the next stage and be a medium enterprise. We've structured the business now as Transmutation Resources, Transmutation Recomposition, and Transmutation Retail. So those three aspects take us through the circular economy journey, really. Our resources division will basically look after the sourcing of the waste plastic and have our kitchen cupboard, I sort of call it, of ingredients that we can use. And then the main product out of there is this high-quality bead. So we've also started the Australian Micro Recyclers Association, president of that. So with all our members there, and they're all different scales, from backyard hobbyists to quite sort of large to medium-sized recycling businesses in that space as well. And we can provide them with high-quality resins, which are 100% recycled. We can also do our post-prime plastic to big industry. And so we're targeting industries like big end construction, ESG-focused businesses, defence, space, all of the high-end businesses that can really have a good niche with high-quality plastic. So that's what the resources business can do. And the idea is it's a drop-in sort of product. So you can take the virgin, the bag of virgin plastic away, and you can put our 100% recycled in, and you won't see any differences with your setup and your machinery and your production. So that's really what we're aiming to do, is take virgin out of the market. That's the resources business. The recomposition business is our manufacturing sort of arm, where we can take the product all the way through and make it, develop it, produce it. And that's what the bar chair is. It's a proof point to show that that's what we can do. We can do that at scale and manufacturing in Australia. We can do it at price point as well. And then the retail side is sort of what we're known for now. So that's our bread tags and our homewares and our online store. But that's so important for this circular economy conversation, because if you don't sell it, it's not a circular economy. And we do not want to fail at that post, and we want to be seen as effective retailers, niche retailers to a certain extent, but we're both looking at B2B and B2C. We're doing the B2C thing quite well, but we're working on the B2B stuff now with the larger corporation. That's our market going forward, really, to grow the business.
We're asking everybody as part of this series their personal definition of innovation, because, you know, you ask 10 people, you get 11 different answers, and that's fascinating to me. Tell me what your take is, please.
Listen to one of your episodes just back in November about the launching of the 50 Most Innovative for 2024, and you had on Martin from Anchor and Ian from Wyoming, and I actually liked Martin's definition. He went to the World Intellectual Property Association or something. So being novel and having utility, it's a simple definition, but I think it tackles two points well, which we think of innovation as something's got to be new, it's got to be different, you know, it's got to do something different. But if it doesn't have utility and there's not a market for it, it's rarely successful, I guess. You can come up with something that's new and different, but if no one wants to use it or buy it or whatever, then it's a good idea before it's time, or, you know, it's a good idea after its time or whatever it is, but it's not, to me, an innovation that's going to stick. So I've always got an eye on, it's got to be useful in the market and serve some sort of purpose going forward. So we all have different definitions of going forward as well. So we're all, as you said, you can come up with a thousand different sort of answers to it. But what I think is going forward, and a product or process or something that will take it in that direction, is what I consider sort of innovation.
We're nearly to the end of this conversation. I'd just like to ask the standard closing question, and that is, what's an issue within manufacturing that's not getting the attention it deserves in your view?
I think stewardship. I think if every manufacturer thought about whatever they're making, what happens to it at the end of life, we're having different conversations. We're starting to look at stewardship and circular economy thinking and whatever, but to me, the majority of the market in manufacturing is still making stuff for a market, but not thinking about what happens to it at the end of its life. By doing that, you can go back the other way and look at the design and the materials that you're using. There's a whole different conversation when you start looking at, okay, what's going to happen to this at the end of its life? So, for example, our Cradle to Grave policy means you can mail everything back to us for free and we can recycle it again, because our homewares are polystyrene, so they're not going to fit into the normal recycling chain. So we've got to provide that avenue for people, because we want to keep it out of landfill for as long as possible, upcycle it back into a system. So upcycling is really critical of materials, and manufacturers actually thinking about, whatever I'm making, what happens to it at the end of its life, and can I design it differently? Can I use different materials? Can I put it into a scheme that already exists by using different materials? I mean, that's just, bulker bags are a good example of that. If you use certain types of plastic like PP in your bulker bag, it can get recycled fairly easily, where if you use a combination of PETs and polyprop and HDPE type stuff in all the different types of, you know, fittings on the bulker bag, then it's really hard to recycle. So it's just simple things like that. When I'm making something, what happens at the end of it? Who's got to pick it apart? Can it be recycled? Is it going straight to landfill?
Brad, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Thanks very much for donating your time, and it was lovely to meet you.
All right, thanks, Brad.